Hey, everybody, it's Amna Nawaz, national correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Your regularly scheduled podcast will return right after this, but I wanted to tell you about our latest original podcast series, Broken Justice.
You have these honest-to-God human beings, and you know that some of them are slipping through the cracks.
This is Public Defense in America.
Hey, here's your 200 cases. You have court in 20 minutes. It's across the street. Go.
A huge part of the justice system.
You also have the right to an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, one can be provided.
But one that's been struggling for far too long with too many clients.
I feel the stress of 150 souls on my back.
Not enough money and too few lawyers.
A warm body with a pulse and a law license is not enough.
From the PBS NewsHour, a new series, Broken Justice. We'll take you to Missouri, the front lines of the public defense crisis in America, to show you what it looks like for these lawyers.
You end up with a system of putting out fires, and those fires are people's lives.
And how it can play out for defendants. Like Ricky Kidd, who 22 years ago was sentenced to life in prison for double homicide.
I 100% believe that I'm in prison today because of the Missouri public defender system.
And how he learned the hard way that the promise of a lawyer didn't mean he would get a fair shot.
It's been rough. If I ended up in life without possibility of parole, something I didn't even do.
Broken Justice is available now. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
On this edition for Saturday, November 9th, the latest on the impeachment inquiry as Republicans release their witness wish list.
I miss you.
In our signature segment, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Graham Nash. And Marie Kondo with a tidying adventure for kids, next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
From the Tisch WNET studios at Lincoln Center in New York, Megan Thompson.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. Public hearings in the impeachment inquiry begin this Wednesday, and today Republicans released a list of the people they would like to testify. In a letter to House Intelligence Committee Chairman Democrat Adam Schiff, Republicans listed at least eight people they believe should be compelled to publicly testify. The list includes Hunter Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden's son, who served on the board of Ukrainian energy company Burisma Holdings. Republicans are also asking for the anonymous whistleblower whose complaint initiated the impeachment inquiry to testify, as well as anyone the whistleblower relied on in drafting the complaint. Under the rules passed by the House last week, Democrats leading the inquiry have to approve all witnesses, and it's almost certain they will reject many of these requests. On his way to Tuscaloosa to attend the Alabama-LSU football game, President Trump told reporters no one should testify in the impeachment inquiry. Mr. Trump also said he may release the transcript of a second call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky later this week.
I actually had two calls with the president of Ukraine. So you'll read the second call and you'll tell me if you think there's anything wrong with it. But never in history has anybody gone through this. It's a witch hunt and it should never happen to another president. Thank you. Thank
you.
German and Eastern European leaders gathered in Berlin today to mark the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. The ceremony was held on a street where one of the last parts of the barrier that separated the communist-ruled East from the capitalist West for 28 years still remains. German Chancellor Angela Merkel commemorated those killed for trying to flee from East to West and said that the fight for freedom around the world continues. Germany was reunified only 1 year after the toppling of the Berlin Wall, one of the most powerful Cold War symbols. Four people were killed and 108 others were injured today during ongoing anti-government protests in Iraq. Three people died when they were shot, and a fourth died after being hit in the head with a tear gas canister when security forces cleared three main bridges over the Tigris River. Demonstrations calling for an overhaul of Iraq's government began last month and have been growing increasingly violent. In Australia today, officials said that wildfires on the east coast have killed three people, injured dozens more, and destroyed more than 150 homes. Firefighters are battling more than 70 fires across New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, during a severe drought. Australia's annual fire season started early this year after an unusually dry and warm winter. 1 year ago, thousands of Northern Californians were fleeing the Camp Fire, a huge wildfire that killed 85 people, destroyed 95% of the town of Paradise, and burned more than 150,000 acres.
We begin to heal.
Yesterday, residents and officials marked the anniversary with a small ceremony and 85 seconds of silence, one for each victim of the fire, in a town that is still struggling to recover. San Francisco Chronicle reporter Lizzie Johnson joins us now from Paradise, California. So, Lizzie, I understand that you've been actually living part-time in Paradise for the last year, doing your reporting. Tell us, what's it like there now, 1 year later?
The big emphasis is on rebuilding. So when you drive around town, it's not just burnt down lots and homes and buildings. It's a blank slate. It's driving past, you know, what looks like entire fields of empty dirt.
Do we have a sense of how many people are planning to return?
So there's no exact data, but the town manager did say that the town of Paradise has received about 500 rebuilding permits since last year. So that's the best estimate they have. And since last November, 15 houses have been rebuilt. And keep in mind, that's out of 14,000 that were burned down.
What are the people who are staying or returning? What are they saying? I mean, how are they feeling?
It's hard. At the ceremony yesterday, officials were talking about how the amount of debris in Paradise after the campfire was 2.5 times what came down in New York City after the 9/11 attacks. So the fact that they've gotten rid of most of the debris and have a place to rebuild. So I think a lot of people that I've talked with, they're frustrated by how long it takes and they just want to get back to their old life.
I wanted to ask about whether they're rebuilding in a different way in order to ensure that buildings and houses are built maybe in a more safe place.
So when it comes to building, the town has made some pretty major changes. Things like having the siding raised off the ground so that if a fire creeps up, it doesn't automatically lick up the wall. Mobile homes have to have been built within the last 10 years. At the time of the campfire, most homes were about 30 years old. So very flammable. One house caught on fire and that caused the entire block to catch on fire.
You talked about frustration over how long things are taking. I mean, what kind of help and aid is the town getting from the state and federal government?
There have been a lot of grants that have come in from FEMA, from the state, from the North Valley Community Foundation, grants to help people rebuild, to get loans to rebuild. But in the wake of a disaster like this, the need is just massive.
All right, Lizzie Johnson of the San Francisco Chronicle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To read more about the Republicans' requests for testimony in the ongoing impeachment inquiry, visit pbs.org/newshour. Two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Graham Nash is famous for writing and performing classic rock staples like Teach Your Children and Our House with the band Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. But he recently played a set of shows centered around some music he's far less known for. NewsHour Weekend's Tom Casciato has more.
It's not just his fans who appreciate that Graham Nash is still going strong at 77.
Nice to be back.
So does Graham Nash.
At my age, it's nice to be anywhere.
But some of his recent shows might seem curious to those who know him only for his hits. He has decades worth of chart toppers to draw from. But he recently did shows featuring his lesser-known first two solo albums in their entirety. And you have to wonder why.
There are certainly artists of your generation who go back and revisit their finest commercial moment, if not their finest artistic moment.
I want to be as real as possible. I'm coming to the end of my life. I'm 77 years old right now. How much longer can this go on? I hope to be around for at least the next 30, 40 years, but I might drop dead in the middle of this conversation.
With no time like the present to do it, Nash kicks off the show with the opener from his first album, Songs for Beginners. In upstairs room in Blackpool. It starts with his birth in the midst of World War II in Blackpool, England.
What were you doing in Blackpool, which was not your hometown?
No, I lived in Salford, which is a small part of Manchester in the north of England. and Manchester was being bombed heavily, and pregnant ladies were evacuated out of the bombing area.
Military Madness was an anti-war anthem, with social protest rooted in childhood memories. But it had the kind of engaging melody Nash was known for, and even a kind of sing-along feel to it.
You and a lot of your peers of that era were anti-war, but not all of them came upon that having grown up around bomb craters.
We were playing in buildings that could have collapsed on us at any moment. And if my parents would have found out, I would have been in big trouble.
The album came out in 1971, Nash joining a list of confessional singer-songwriters on the charts at the moment their genre hit the cover of Time as the hot new thing. It followed the breakup of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and another breakup with his live-in love, Joni Mitchell. But on Songs for Beginners, even Lost Love could ride along on a tuneful wave that took a bit of the sting out. Overall, the album came across as an affirmative, idealistic affair. Wild Tales, released in early 1974, was something else again. It arrived at a moment when among Nash's peers, on the radio at least, confessional songwriting had given way to polished pop balladry. And when I go away,
I know my heart can stay with my love. My Love by Paul McCartney, Barbara Streisand, The Way We Were. You knew how to write love songs, and you knew how to write hits, and yet, with Wild Tales, you didn't go in the direction of what was on the radio at the time. What was on your mind?
All the stuff that's in Wild Tales.
Nash wasn't going for the gloss of pop-friendly radio. Don't the wind blow cold when you're hanging your soul on the line? Again, he mined his childhood for inspiration, but the memories hurt this time.
My father was an engineer. My mother had to look after three kids, of course, but she had to work also. We were very poor, but my father had bought a camera from a friend of his at work, and one day the police came to our door. They wanted to know where my father had bought the camera, because they think that the camera had been stolen. And well, in the north of England at that point, and I'm sure it's the same all over the world, you don't rat on your friends. And so my father wouldn't tell them, and he actually spent a year in jail.
And what did that do to your dad, and what did that do to you?
I think it broke his heart. I think it was shameful. He felt ashamed that the police had come to the door. And he died at 46. One day your friend took me aside and said I have to leave you for buying something from a friend. They say I've done wrong.
Nash turned experience to a plea for prison reform long before such sentiments hit the mainstream. So now I'm bidding you farewell for much too long. And here's a song to sing for. Meanwhile, the troops had left Vietnam the year before, but that didn't stop Nash from writing a song called O Camille.
Scott Camille was one of the most highly decorated soldiers in the Vietnam War. Many, many medals for absolute bravery. Gung-ho, into it. O Camille, tell me how do you feel? And then he had a come-to-Jesus meeting with himself, where he realized that what he had been doing all these years was wrong. Will you tell all the people about the people you killed? Not for God, but for country and war.
Nash was inspired by Camille's having testified in a war crimes forum sponsored by the group Vietnam Veterans Against the War.
And if people were in the villages yelling and screaming, we didn't help them. We just burned the houses as we went. It wasn't like they were humans. Like, we were, you know, we were conditioned to believe that, you know, this was for the good of the nation, the good of our country, and anything we did was okay.
Oh, Camille, tell me, what did your mother say when you left those people out in the fields rotting along with the hay?
Unlike his earlier anti-war song, O Camille was no sing-along.
Did you show her your guns? Did you show her the ears that you wore?
Did you show them the ears that you wore? I didn't know what that meant when I first heard that song.
Some American soldiers in the Vietnam War were gung-ho enough to, when they killed their enemies, that they would cut off their ears and make a bracelet of them to wear.
Will you tell all the people about the people that stand up for God? Not for country and war.
His lost love, Joni Mitchell, made an expressive painting of Nash for the album's back cover. And it was her haunting, wordless vocals that brought the record to a close on a tune called Another Sleep Song.
It sounds like you're writing about being flat out depressed.
Yes.
In that song.
I am. I was avoiding the day. I was avoiding sunlight. I was almost like a vampire.
All I need is someone to awaken me. Much of me has gone to sleep.
The melodies were there, and the words were deeply felt. But Wild Tales was Graham Nash's first commercial, though not artistic, failure.
You made an album where you had sympathy for incarcerated people, where you wrote vividly about war crimes. And you ended the record with a song about being thoroughly and utterly depressed. Looking back, can you see why it might not have been one of your big hits?
I do. I definitely understand. I was depressed, you know, and the music shows it. But that's all I've ever written about, is what's happening to me. I've got money and I've got fame and I've got all those other things, you know, that I never wanted in the first place. But I'm still this person that feels very deeply about many things.
We can heed the call. We can trip and fall.
Which brings us back to why he's singing these songs at this moment. To be, in his words, as real as possible, with no time like the present.
Let the ashes fall upon us all.
If you've never used the tidying advice of Marie Kondo, chances are pretty high that you know someone who has used her techniques to discard mounds of personal stuff. This week, Kondo launched her latest project, a book aimed at children. I spoke with her earlier this week here in New York.
Hello, I'm Marie Kondo.
Home organizing guru Marie Kondo says she's always loved keeping tidy, but she actually found getting rid of things really stressful until she realized this.
What's important in tidying up is not what you throw away, but what you keep. In other words, it would work if I kept things that made me happy in my home, things that I love, the things that I cherish.
And it's this idea of only keeping things that spark joy, as she says, that's made her a major celebrity. Her books, including the 2014 blockbuster, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, have sold more than 12 million copies. She was named one of Time magazine's most influential people in 2015. And earlier this year, there was a hit television show on Netflix.
It's fascinating.
In books, on TV, or in person, if you're lucky enough to be one of our actual clients, Kondo teaches her unique approach to keeping tidy. It's called the KonMari Method. It's part practical, part spiritual. When Kondo enters a home, or in this case, the room in which we filmed her interview, she performs a short ritual to greet the space.
It's like giving a small introduction about myself, or it could be gratitude for letting me be here today at this place.
And then the tidying begins.
There are 3 points in the KonMari method. The first is to organize by categories.
Rather than tidy by room, Kondo advises clients and fans to gather every single book or item of clothing in one spot so they can see the totality of what they own.
And the most important thing is that when you are tidying up by categories like that, keep only what sparks joy in you.
And you have to actually pick it up and look at it. Is that right?
That's right. When you hold it in your hand, it would be good for you to sense if your body kind of feels something triggered, like your senses are waking up, whether it sparks joy or not.
And if it doesn't spark joy, what should I do with it?
If it does not spark joy, then say thank you for your service and let it go.
For the objects you do keep, Kondo has systems of organizing and storing, like her famous method of folding shirts in a compact way so they can stand upright in a drawer.
Your books have been hugely popular. You've sold millions of them. You have a TV show. I mean, people seem desperate for this. What do you think that's about?
I think it is because there are really many people in the world who own many things, but their hearts are not fulfilled, and they are suffering from that.
Kondo says she's been interested in tidying and organizing since she was just 5 years old, inspired by her mother, who seemed to really enjoy doing housework.
So when did you realize that this could actually be a business?
This was when I was in the second year of college. I always loved tidying up, so my hobby was to help my friends tidy up their houses. As I continued doing it, the rumor started going around that their houses would become neat if I visited. And from that point on, I started receiving requests to do it for money.
Please welcome Marie Kondo.
And the Kondo empire began. This week, Kondo released her first book for children called Kiki and Jax, The Life-Changing Magic of Friendship. It's a story about Jax the owl, who's called a sorter. Kiki the squirrel, she's, well, a little messy. Kiki misses playdates because she can't find her ball, then her swimsuit. At the end, Jax helps Kiki bring order to her life by sorting through all her stuff. The book even includes illustrations for kids on how to fold a shirt the KonMari way.
Why write a children's book?
Both of our daughters love to read, and they love to implement what they've just read. When I saw them do that, I thought, it would be nice if you could learn tidying up in a fun manner from a picture book.
Kondo says she believes children as young as one, yes, one, can start to learn her methods.
Now, I know that my three-year-old is going to say yes to every single thing. He loves all of his toys. So how do you explain to a child so young that we can't keep everything?
If that's the case, I think it's very important to verbally explain to a child that the space in your house is limited, and this is the storage place where you can put your toys right now.
Another Kondo tip: rather than asking your child if an item sparks joy, ask them to order their toys according to what they like best. Then eliminate their least favorite items.
So for me, what's most important about this book is that it teaches children that tidying can be so much fun. You tend to think of tidying up as something you must do, something burdensome. But you can learn to cherish your belongings even more, and I hope that even small children can learn such things.
I'm done. Done.
This is PBS NewsHour Weekend, Saturday.
As we just saw, Marie Kondo has become famous in part for her folding techniques. And with her new children's book out, we asked her to give us a few of her tips, specifically for kids' clothing.
This is how you fold children's clothes. The difference from the normal way you fold adults' clothes is, with small clothes, it would look neater if you reduce the number of times you fold it. So really, baby clothes are clothes for up to 2 years old or so. You can just fold it in half and then put the sleeves inside. Then, fold it to one-third of the size. Here, done. And clothes for the children who are a little older, basically, you can use the same way to fold as adults. You make a rectangle with the body part of the garment at its center. Then fold the sleeves inside. Do the same to the other side. And a child's clothes, if it's a small one like this one, about one third of the body size of the garment. And a collared shirt. You can basically use the same way of folding for this kind of shirt. Make a rectangle with the body part of the garment at its center. What you have to protect here is the collar part, so you make it a little bigger than the collar. Fold the sleeves, and fold it into one third so that it won't get wrinkly. By folding vertically like this, when you open the drawer, you can see at a glance what's in it.
We'll have more on the upcoming public impeachment inquiry hearings online and on our broadcast tomorrow. NewsHour correspondent Lisa Desjardins will join us with the latest from Washington, D.C., and a look ahead to the congressional committee hearings. And that's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. I'm Megan Thompson. Thanks for watching. Have a good night.